Hello and welcome back to the Next Sense Institute podcast. My name's Trudy Smith and I am both the manager of continuing professional education at Next Sense Institute and your podcast host for today. We can continue our deep dive into the topic of advocacy. We've got an old friend to the podcast, John Louis, who's joined us today. Welcome, John. Could you please introduce yourself to anyone who hasn't met you before on our podcast or in our field?
Yeah, thank you, Trudy. So for those of you joining today, my name is John Louis, and I'm the National Manager of an organisation which is now part of the Shepherd Centre Court here for you.
Thanks for that, John. And as we said, we're talking about experiences of advocacy, and I'm wondering if you can first tell us some of the experiences that you've had being an advocate for yourself and your personal life.
It's sort of a tricky question to answer because it's not many large advocacy projects that I've been engaged in. So it's sort of been more for myself on a day-to-day basis. And I see that's a lot of friction or tension points for people who are deaf or hard of hearing or have hearing loss in that day. It's more about when they engage with other people who don't necessarily understand what deafness or hearing loss entails in our day-to-day lives. So for example, now that I'm a parent of two children and they're going to school, I have to sort of advocate for myself for information when it comes to parent-teacher information. Or when they send out videos containing information about what's happening in school, I have to go up to the school and say, hey, do you have a live captioning or can you have something that's in written form so I can understand what's going on? So it's all sorts of things like that. So for example, as other people may have with living experiences, is that, for example, if you're going to a supermarket and you're talking to someone at the checkout counter and that person's asking you questions, but they're not facing you at the time that they ask it, and you sort of go, should I ask them to repeat themselves? You're trying to look at their faces, all the while you're very conscious that there's a lot of people behind you waiting to be served as well. So those are sort of the advocacy that I do for myself on a day-to-day basis. But I do remember about a decade ago, maybe a little bit more, I wanted to go and see a performance of The Lion King. And, this is not the movie version, it's the theatre version. And I know that there's an organisation called Auslan Stage Left, which do a great job of interpreting those performances. But for myself, because I'm not a native Auslan user and I'm not fluent in it, so I wouldn't be able to access the performance using that interpreting service. So I sent a message to the organisers saying, is there any opportunity to have live captioned performances? And they said, no, but we do have Auslan Stage Left. And so I had to sort of explain to them that in my situation, that I'm not a native Auslan user, so it's not going to work for me. And so it got to the point where I sort of had to involve the Human Rights Commission and sort of say, hey, well, look, can we come to an agreement on this? And so we got to the point where they agreed to hold live caption performances on certain dates in the future. And I think one date did come out, but that was in Melbourne, whereas I'm in Sydney. So again, I couldn't access that. So that was one major advocacy point I remember taking on a large company, say, hey, look, it's great that you're doing this, but for a lot of other people, the use of Auslan is not our way to access the information. So that's, I think, it's important in terms of increasing people's understandings around living experiences of deafness and hearing loss.
Yeah, and I think that's a really popular misconception, isn't it? That if we've got Auslan, then we've got the whole population covered. But it's certainly that we have certainly a lot of Australians who are deaf or hard of hearing who use listening and spoken language as their access point. And so captions is a much more practical way to access that. So a lot of what you're doing, and while it's useful for you, it's also really helping the community.
Yeah, and it's quite understandable in that people may think that Auslan is the catch-all for the deaf community, because Auslan is a visible language, whereas those of us using spoken language, we're engaging in an invisible mode of communication. And so we are presenting and functioning as normal people. So therefore, it can be understandable as to why people have that misconception around accessibility for deaf people.
Absolutely. And so if we move, although what the work you've been doing certainly does help the wider community in thinking about advocacy, particularly in the work that Here For You and you personally do as General Manager does for the deaf and hard of community, I wonder if you can give us some senses and information about what you've been doing in that realm.
Yeah, so over the years when Here For You has been started, it's sort of broadened its remit a bit. But at the core of PVU essentially is about mentoring young teenagers who are in high school. And that was out of the sort of realization that there's so many teenagers who are therefore have hearing loss who are mainstreamed into normal schools. And so they often end up being the only teenager in their school with a hearing loss, which is understandable. And they come from families who don't have any history of hearing loss. And so in one way, it's great for them to feel normal as I did going through high school. But there's going to come a point of reckoning where, or a time of reckoning where they have to sort of understand that considering their deaf identity is important, because it's important to have that consideration and understanding of the practical realities of living with hearing loss for when they leave high school and start going into the workforce or tertiary education and engaging with people who don't have the understanding or time to understand in a time-compressed situation about accessibility and hearing loss and all that sort of stuff, because everyone's busy in their own time. So it can be quite a shock for that teenager to sort of realize, oh, well, actually, I'm not as normal as I thought I was before. And so that's what we do. So all of our volunteer mentors also, they all have hearing loss themselves. So we have that lived experience perspective. And so it provides a unique environment where our workshops, where deafness is removed as a point of difference. And so we would hope that the teenagers feel like that they can sort of be themselves a little bit more, not have to worry about being behind or missing out on what's going on, or feeling like that they can't ask or interrupt the flow of things to clarify what's going on. So that's what we do. We are engaging that mentoring aspect for them and serving as role models, and hopefully inspiring them to take control of their lives a little bit more.
Yeah, I love the point that you mentioned about how you take away deafness as the point of difference. And I wonder if there is a visible relaxation or a visible change in the teens when they come into that room and realize that they're just like everybody else. Is there a change, do you see, in the way that they interact or their personalities?
Yeah, I mean, when we have that meet and greet, or when they come to one of our workshops for the first time, you know, our mentors can sort of see them looking around the room and sort of, you know, sizing up other people and go, oh, you know, this guy's got a hearing aid too, or she's got a cochlear implant, or wow, you know, they're using spoken language, so they're like me as well. Once they start to sort of realize that they're with other people who are like them, then you can sort of see them start to open up over the course of their interactions with us, not necessarily in that one workshop, but over a number of workshops and a number of, you know, it's such an individual timeline that some people, you just don't know if it's benefiting them at all, because, you know, sometimes they've got a really good poker face, even though their parents are saying, no, it's really beneficial. They're contributing more at the dinner table. They're asking more questions at the school. But when they come and talk to us, and we ask them how things are going, they're sort of like, whatever. And it's not until they leave high school and they come back as young adults, often as mentors or volunteers themselves, they sort of go, well, actually, that time it here for you was really, really beneficial. And it's really pleasing to hear that. But there's also a little bit of a joke amongst mentors, like, well, it would have been really helpful to have heard that
at the time
program with us. So
I guess that makes them more like, you know, in inverted commas, regular teenagers who, what did you learn at school, what did you do today at school? Nothing.
That's it.
Yeah, so they're still teenagers in spite of the environment, but I guess it is nice to have that feedback afterwards, at least, that the work you're doing is so important. And I wonder why it's so important for you to be involved in this work, John.
It's my life, essentially, you know, it's my living experiences. But I started wanting to sort of maybe give back and help some other teenagers in their journey. But that in itself has been a journey in itself, realizing that my experiences, you know, are not going to reflect, you know, the teenagers of today and their experiences. And so that's something, you know, we're always mindful of telling the mentors, saying, hey, guys, I know you've got a lot of life experiences to share, but please be mindful that just because you went through these experiences and you dealt with it in this way doesn't mean that that's going to be the case for whoever you're talking to or mentoring. But yeah, so it's sort of like, well, if I'm in a position to sort of increase awareness on both ends, both for the teenagers themselves in their personal self-development, and also for the general public to sort of understand the invisible nature of, you know, what really goes on behind the scenes, then it's, I guess it's gratifying to, you know, just be a part of it at least.
Absolutely. It's such an important contribution, I think, for the teenagers and the community. I wonder if you're talking to other people in the community who are considering doing this kind of work. And I think what I really want to know from you is, like, when you've got those mentors or those teenagers who come back and say, I want to do this, what advice do you have for them in engaging in or teaching people to be advocates for themselves and the community?
Well, like, I think it sort of correlates with the point I made before about, you know, one, sort of realizing that your experiences are not somebody else's experiences, even though you have commonalities and may have similar experiences or similar scenarios that you will experience, but the way you deal with them or the way you may feel about it may be different. Like, for example, a situation that surrounding accessibility may not be that important to you, or you may be confident in dealing with it, but for other people, it can be a big thing. It can be everything to them. So that's one thing to sort of understand that, okay, you're here to help and share experiences, maybe guide people through, but not to assume that yours is the same as theirs. And also, in when you're thinking about becoming an advocate for themselves, or you're advocating for yourself, is to sort of understand that every little bit that you do does help in some way, but sort of understand and accept that you don't have to do everything.
Yep. So small steps and yeah, but recognize that every contribution is an important one.
Yeah. And so I think as a starting point, if you're sort of open and honest with yourself about yourself, your life experiences, and sort of really thinking about how you felt in those experiences, because sometimes it's easy for myself to think back to high school and go, oh, high school, yeah, no problem, I had a good time. But then you sort of think about, well, all the parties I went to, or the team sports I played, and you go, well, that's actually pretty tricky. It was actually harder to be sort of on the eight ball all the time.
Yeah.
So I was always sort of behind the eight ball, trying to sort of catch up, and never could be on that same wavelength. Despite, you know, the best intentions of the friends around me and the teachers around me, it's just a fact of life with a person, as a person with deafness. So I think it helps to be absolutely honest and open, say, hey, look, not to pretend that life is all roses,
yep,
but to actually make sure, yes, some parts I did really did struggle, some parts I don't have the answers for, but just even being open and honest about that is a big thing in itself.
Absolutely. And you can't be expected to have all the answers. And I think sometimes, is that a relief to your teens that sometimes it turns out that we were always learning, we're always growing. We don't know the answer, but we can find it with you.
Absolutely. You sort of feel like as adults, as you get older and wiser, you feel like you have to have the answer for everything. And people are looking to you for the answers as well. So it is a big thing to say, hey, look, it's okay to be open to say, I don't have all the answers, but let's try and find out together. And I think it's important for our mentors and young adults to also feel like they're part of the community as well, not feel like that they're just there just to help the teenagers and that's it. But by being part of PeerView, they're part of this wider community of other people, just like them at that age range as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you for all of your insights, John. We will share information in the show notes about Here4You. If you're listening to this and this is an organisation that you either want to loop a teenager into, that you know or learn more about. So as always, John, it's such a pleasure to talk with you and I appreciate your time today.
Yeah, thank you. It's really always an honour to be invited on.
Thank you. And thank you, everyone. And we will talk to you again next week.